Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, August 9th, 2022. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. In local news headlines, Dubuque Regional Airport staff prepare for MLB Field of Dreams game. Story by John Cruz, thmedia.com. On Thursday, August 11th, the staff at Dubuque Regional Airport will don their baseball jerseys and get ready to take the field. Unlike the professional baseball players who will land at the airport that day, though, the jerseys of the airport staff will be orange and their field is significantly larger. "We actually did get orange baseball jerseys this year so everyone can be seen," Airport Director Todd Dalsing said. "There is definitely a fair amount of excitement for this game." This marks the second year the local airport will serve as the landing and parking site for the numerous aircraft landing in Dubuque County for the Major League Baseball game at the Fields of Dreams in Dyersville. Following last year's game between the Chicago White Sox and the New York Yankees, this year's August 11th game between the Chicago Cubs and the Cincinnati Reds is expected to generate just as much airport traffic as last time. Adam Langbecker, fixed base operator supervisor at the airport, said the airport will welcome three 737 aircraft and one 757, along with about 30 private jets that currently are scheduled to arrive carrying game attendees, though Dalsing said he estimates about 60 private jets will be scheduled by game day. Langbecker said the aircraft likely will begin arriving in the night before the game, but the bulk of the airport traffic will be from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. August 11th. While many aircraft will take off right after the game concludes, several others will stay the night and leave in the morning, Langbecker said. "It's going to be 3 days of pretty heavy traffic," Langbecker said. "We got our teeth cut last year, and we're going to run a very similar plan." Since the larger jets will take up the majority of the airport's main apron, one of the airport's runways will be closed and used to park the remaining aircraft, Dalsing said. While the baseball game is being played, airport staff will host the dozens of pilots, co-pilots, and flight attendants waiting at the airport for the passengers to arrive, Langbecker said. "We're going to open up all of the upstairs of the main building, bring in some food for everyone, turn on some TVs, and give them the opportunity to all enjoy the game together," Langbecker said. Dalsing said the day of the MLB game at the Fields of Dreams is one of the busier days at the Dubuque Regional Airport, but with some experience under their belt, he is certain that the staff can work as a team and deliver a logistical home run. "It's very cool that we get to be a small part of the whole baseball experience," Dalsing said. "We're looking forward to game day." Life remembered. A good soul, Bob Waller, remembered for kindness, philanthropy. Story by Grace Nealon, thmedia.com. Robert H. Waller, was known to always have a smile on his face. He asked everyone he crossed paths with how they were doing, and he truly listened to their answers. Imbued with a sort of generational kindness, he did his best to make people feel heard. "He got that from his father and his great-uncle, Harry," said Bob Waller, Bob's son. "He came from a heritage and a family where philanthropy and giving back has been a part of who we have always been." On Saturday, August 6th, Bob Waller died surrounded by his loved ones. He was 83. Following his death, family and community members alike remember the local philanthropist for his kindness, generosity, and humility. "He was a very genuine, sincere person," said Bill be vice president for institutional advancement at Clark University, where Wallert sat on the board for several years. "In addition to his own strong desire to help and improve other people's lives, he was a strong proponent of encouraging others to do the same." Wallert was born in Dubuque in 1939. He attended Loras Academy and received his bachelor's degree in 1961 from the University of Iowa. He became executive vice president of Dubuque Packing Company, his family's business, in 1973, and later operated the site as FDL Foods Incorporated until its sale in 1996. He also served as a trustee and officer since the early 1970s for the Wallert Foundation, a family-run organization that has donated more than $17 million to local schools, universities, and nonprofits. Even after retiring, Wallert has remained involved in the foundation, as well as several other community boards. Bob was a good soul, said Jim Collins, president of Loras College, which has received several grants from the Wallert Foundation. His legacy will be that of a great role model and leader, both in the way he conducted his affairs in business, but also in the way he gave back to the community. In addition to his philanthropic efforts, Wallert was extremely dedicated to his family and his Catholic faith. He cared deeply for his wife, Donna, their five children, and many grandchildren. Faith, family, and community were probably his three pillars, Mark Wallert said, and family always came first. Bob was an avid traveler, going all over the world with his wife or with his children. He visited China, Australia, and New Zealand, as well as several trips to Europe. England was his favorite repeat destination. He was a fan of classical music, theater productions, and puzzles, known to do a crossword puzzles most days, usually in ink. Wallert also loved to boat, having a love affair with going out on the Mississippi River, according to his son. A lifelong member of St. Columbkill Catholic Church, he was also committed to his faith. He served as a Eucharistic minister and was a steadfast advocate for Catholic education. He believed in Catholic education and in education in general, recalled Bob Noel, director of advancement at Holy Family Catholic Schools, which has benefited from consistent support from the Wallert Foundation. He wanted to give back to the community, and I think he enjoyed the fact that Wallert Catholic High School was a family namesake. Echoed time and time again by those who knew him was the fact that Wallert left an indelible mark on the city of Dubuque, one which will be felt for years to come. He loved a lot of people and was loved by a lot of people, Mark Wallert said. He's going to be missed not just by the family, but by the whole community. Country music star to play concert at Field of Dreams after the MLB game. Dateline, Dyersville, Iowa. A country music star will play a concert this week at the Field of Dreams following the Major League Baseball game at the site. Walker Hayes will play a special concert on Thursday, August 11th for fans attending the MLB game between the Chicago Cubs and the Cincinnati Reds, according to a press release from MLB. Hayes will perform at the conclusion of the MLB game. Last year, Hayes performed in Dubuque in a concert with Mitchell Tenpenny at Q Casino Backwater Stage. Hayes' song Fancy Like hit number one on the Billboard Country Airplay chart last year. The song was also nominated for a Best Country Song Grammy in the April ceremony. Hayes has two other top 10 songs on the Billboard Country Airplay chart. You Broke Up With Me, which debuted in 2017, and AA, which debuted last year. Pretty special experience. Local residents eagerly anticipate attending the Field of Dream game. Earlier this summer, Dubuque resident Josh Wiedemann entered the lottery for the chance to buy tickets to the August 11th Major League Baseball game between the Chicago Cubs and Cincinnati Reds at the Field of Dreams. After the lottery, which is open to Iowa residents from June 2nd to 9th, closed, he got an email telling him he hadn't been selected. But a few weeks later, he was notified that he was a winner in a second-round drawing and could purchase a pair of tickets. At first, I thought it was a scam, but once I realized it was real, I was obviously very excited, said Wiedemann, a lifelong Cubs fan who grew up in Dubuque and watched parts of the filming of the Field of Dreams movie. He paid about $825 for a pair of tickets and a parking pass and is eagerly anticipating attending Thursday's game with a friend. I'm looking forward to watching the Cubs here in Iowa, which doesn't happen very often, of course, and to seeing the stadium and the spectacle of it all in the pageantry, as well as meeting other baseball fans from all over the country, Wiedemann said. Upon opening the lottery in June, MLB officials said at least 25% of the tickets for the game, or 2,000, would go exclusively to people with Iowa zip codes who were chosen through the lottery. The remaining tickets were to be distributed by both teams among season ticket holders, sponsors, business partners, and other organizations. Casey Smith said there was lots of shouting and excitement in her family's Dubuque home when she learned she was a lottery winner. My husband has not stopped talking about the dream of going to this game since 3 years ago when they first announced it was going to be here, she said. So when I got it, it was almost like, you're joking, right? Casey said she and her husband, Justin, who is a women's basketball coach at the University of Dubuque, paid about $350 per ticket. "There's not one ounce of us that would ever sell the ticket," she said. "We're just so excited for the experience. We just watched Field of Dreams as a family the other night to get ourselves hyped for it." Some tickets for Thursday's game are going for thousands of dollars on online resellers. As of Monday afternoon, SeatGeek offered tickets from $715 for a seat along left field to $4,551 each for a pair of seats behind the right field dugout. Prices on StubHub ranged from $790 to $5,200 per ticket. Casey's brother, Tyler Breitbach, came within inches of attending the game. He was selected in the lottery, but technical difficulties during the buying process meant the tickets were gone before he could grab them. "I've been razzing Casey to take me in, also just about her being lucky enough to be drawn," said Breitbach, who will watch the game on TV with friends at his home in Dubuque. "I'm just looking forward to reliving the magic of last year with that baseball game." Breitbach said growing up, his family has always backed the Cubs, said Justin's. And Justin Smith, who grew up near Des Moines, has fond memories of watching the Iowa Cubs, the Chicago team's minor league affiliate. Casey Smith said the couple looks forward to the intimate experience of the 8,000-seat stadium in Tyersville. "The stadium's so small that you'll be able to have an interactive experience with the players," she said. "For us to have these players that we watch every game to be right here that close is pretty special." Dubuque resident Digger Kurt, who received a complimentary pair of tickets to Thursday's game through the sports betting website DraftKings, is particularly excited to watch Cubs players Wilson Contreras and Ian Happ. "Going into the trade deadline, it looked like they were going to trade a couple of their players. I'd like to think they didn't do that for me because I was going to the game," he said with a chuckle. Last summer, he and his brothers entered the lottery for the matchup between the Chicago White Sox and the New York Yankees. His brother Carl won the chance to buy the tickets and took their brother Nick, while Digger and brother Ken watched the game on TV. The roles will be reversed this year as Digger plans to give his second ticket to Ken. "I just think it will be cool having a major league team 25 minutes from us. Being able to go out and see this game this close is going to be amazing," Digger said. "And the game last year looked incredible, so I'm really excited about being able to witness the scenery that we saw on TV last year." Andy Schroeder of Dubuque also snagged free tickets through a sports betting website. "It took me probably less than 2 seconds to say yes," he said. Schroeder, who works for Pranker Solutions Group, said plenty of co-workers volunteered to serve as his plus one for the game. He ultimately decided to give his second ticket to a friend. "The Cubs have always been our family's team," he said. "We've been to many games at Wrigley Field and watched them play at stadiums all over the country, but it'll be a pretty special experience to see them playing at Field of Dreams for sure." Ted Rollins, CEO of Envision Screen Printing and Embroidery, as well as co-founder of Dimensional Brewing Company, got tickets to the game from a friend. "Having attended last year's game, he is eager to witness this year's performance. Last year's game was the best sporting event I've ever been to in my life, and I've been to the World Series and Super Bowl," he said. "I'm a lifelong Cubs fan, and I grew up in Farley, 5 miles from the Field of Dreams, so just seeing your favorite team playing right in your backyard is going to be pretty special." Hinson voices support for flood mitigation like Dubuque's B Branch project during visit. U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson, R. Iowa, visited Dubuque on Monday for a tour of the marquee flood mitigation projects the city of Dubuque has completed and the B Branch Creek watershed. To date, the B Branch Watershed Flood Mitigation Project, aimed at reducing flash flooding, improving water quality, and encouraging investment in neighborhoods subject to past flooding, has received $250 million in investment. The city has been particularly successful at securing state and federal funding for the project components, with the city footing just $85.5 million of the bill at the total build-out, according to city civil engineer Darren Muring, who helped lead Monday's tour from the front of a Jewel transit bus. Muring, along with representatives of the Iowa Flood Center and American Flood Coalition, guided Hinson from the Jewel operations and training system to the Carter Road detention basin, the greater project's final success completed in 2003, and West 32nd Street detention basin before a walk along the B Branch Creek Greenway. A lot of my priority in Congress has been on flood mitigation and trying to make sure my colleagues understand the investments and how they can be really proactive, Hinson said after her tour. I think what is encouraging after these conversations today is you can not only invest in flood mitigation, but you can do it in ways that really benefit your community. These projects are great examples for how to do this and make a measurable impact on water management. Muiring also presented this Dubuque City Council with an update on progress and what is left to do to complete the Bee Branch Watershed Flood Mitigation Project on Monday night. He said the goal was to remind council members before they enter their long-term goal-setting period in the coming weeks. We've completed this now. The creek is kind of done, Muiring told the TH. But other projects, including green alleys and the development of city-acquired property in the area, remain. North End storm sewers are part of the plan. We haven't really worked on it yet. As included in the Bee Branch Watershed Flood Mitigation Project, the City of Dubuque has $87.7 million in five major projects yet to do. The soonest planned is the $18.9 million replacement of the Bee Branch Floodgate and pump at Cooperville Boulevard, scheduled to be completed in 2025. The furthest out is the completion of the city's Green Alley project, which to date has replaced 80 of the 240 targeted alleys with previous bricks, with pervious bricks, which allow water to infiltrate the soil. Muiring told Hinson that completing these projects was becoming increasingly necessary due to climate change. When we started designing this project, a 100-year rainstorm was 6.5 inches of rain in 24 hours, he said. Now, when we incorporate all that recent data, what was a 100-year storm is now a 50-year storm. It will happen twice as frequently. Hinson said that Dubuque has proven the results of the Bee Branch Creek projects enough for her to be confident in securing colleagues' support in Congress. There's a lot of talk about climate right now, she said. I think this is a great example. We can make those dollars go farther with a real manageable effect. The U.S. Senate passed Democrats' Inflation Reduction Act on Sunday, which included billions of dollars for programs to cut greenhouse gas emissions to prevent impacts like increased floodings rather than just mitigate them. Hinson has denounced the bill at its heads to the House and said Monday that she preferred efforts like the Bee Branch. Looking at the investments they've made in the green spaces, they're using it as a soil conservation tool. But no doubt it has an impact on carbon emissions too, she said. Supporting projects like this in very targeted ways are the way we should be doing things. Iowa Senator Liz Matthes, D. Hiawatha, running against Hinson, said voters will recognize Democrats' stronger efforts to address climate change impacts in November. By voting against the bipartisan infrastructure bill, Ashley Hinson put Washington politics ahead of crucial flood prevention and mitigation projects important to Iowans, she said. In Dubuque, Democratic U.S. Senate candidate criticizes Grassley on health care costs. Story by Eric Hoogstrom, thmedia.com. Speaking in Dubuque, the Democrats seeking to unseat U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley, R. Iowa, took the incumbent to task for failing to keep a lid on health care costs. U.S. Senate candidate, retired U.S. Navy Vice Admiral Michael Franklin, attended a corn boil fundraising event Sunday hosted by Iowa Rep. Lindsey James D. Dubuque. Franklin said Grassley has stoked inflation with some of the Republicans' votes. Chuck Grassley has voted for every tax cut for the uber wealthy and has done everything in his power to increase the cost of pharmaceuticals and health care in the United States, Franken said. Franken said the latest example occurred Sunday when Grassley and other Republican senators eliminated a provision in the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022 that would have capped the price of insulin at $35 a month in the private insurance market. Franken noted that he and fellow military veterans have better insulin pricing than many other Americans. That's because we worked out a deal with pharmaceutical companies, he said. Everybody has made a better deal except for those who protect the pharmaceutical companies. And Chuck Grassley was one of those votes that kept the capping of insulin from happening. Some people on private insurance pay hundreds of dollars monthly for the drug that helps control glucose levels for patients with diabetes. That affects 240,000 Iowans, Franken said. Many are people who are on fixed incomes. Republicans counter that government intervention to cap the price of insulin would cause other costs to rise, such as the price of the drug has increased as the number of people are using it. Michael Sunderman, a spokeswoman for Michaela Sunderman, a spokeswoman for Grassley's campaign, said in an email to the Telegraph Herald that Franken's approach to insulin costs would harm the economy. Mike Franken is touting an amendment that would put the government in control of drug pricing, hurt innovation and access to cures, Sunderman said. Senator Grassley voted for the Kennedy Amendment that would have lowered insulin costs and protected patients and the taxpayers. Democrats blocked the amendment. Like Mike Franken, Senate Democrats want the government to dictate drug prices and ram through partisan spending sprees. James' event drew about 150 attendees and a slew of Democratic office holders, seekers, including Deidre DeShere, candidate for Iowa governor, and Iowa Senator Liz Matthes, candidate for Iowa's 2nd Congressional District. It's really important for people to interact with candidates running for federal and state office, Jane said. Not only for them to meet the candidates, but for the candidates to hear people's stories. DeShere characterized her campaign against Governor Kim Reynolds as grassroots and scrappy. We see a great deal of excitement being generated, not only by my campaign, but by the issues, DeShere said. People care about strengthening our education system, and they care about strengthening our health system. DeShere said her campaign intends to intensify efforts as the November election nears. You haven't seen paid media from us yet, and we're working feverishly to make that happen, she said. You're going to see more organizing from us. We're going to continue to meet people where they are. Edie Joe and Anna O'Connor, both 17-year-old Dubuque residents, attended James' event together. I had never seen anything come to anything like this, Joe said. It was really interesting and I liked the energy. O'Connor said she enjoyed the chance to meet candidates. It was really refreshing just to experience the politics, she said. Dubuque County supervisors spar over HR director search. Story by Benjamin Fisher, thmedia.com. A work session on the Dubuque County Board of Supervisors' ongoing search for a new county human resources director turned into an argument about standards and process at a meeting Monday. Board members have sought a director since former director Dawn Sherman resigned from the position unexpectedly in June. Supervisors then contracted local corporate recruiter and HR consultant Gary McAndrew to help with the day-to-day HR needs in the interim. Supervisors Harley Potthoff and Jay Wickham believe Dubuque County has a talent pool locally to fill the HR director position, and a team of county officials, including Dubuque County Auditor Kevin Dragato, have searched for local candidates. That search attracted 10 applicants, but none with the experience needed for the job, according to Dragato. We did have to go out of county to find our previous human resources director, Sherman, who was, I think by all accounts of the group, the standard we have set, he said. While there were individuals on this list who had pluses, we would have had to combine two or three of them to get the county to where we needed to be at this juncture. Dragato said that the applicants lacked the experience working with government and with labor unions that the search team deemed necessary, recommending that the county hire a consultant for a wider search. The price for admission for improvement, say between $20,000 and $30,000, would be spent in the first 6 months in legal fees if the HR director we hire does not have that high-level extensive experience, he said. Potthoff and Wickham disagreed and requested that about four of the applicants, whom they thought had potential, be brought in for interviews. When you have four applications who have experience from 10 to 22 years, I think it's only fair that you give them the opportunity to interview before you go spend $20,000 to $50,000 searching for somebody who might not have any better qualifications than we have right here, Potthoff said. Wickham added that after an interview, if the Board of Supervisors found the applicants wanting, he would consider a wider search. Supervisor Ann McDonough agreed with Dragato and McAndrew that the county should expand its search due to local applicants' lack of specific experience, especially after hearing that applicants had reached out to Potthoff in private, as one had her. I think it is a courtesy to people who apply, if they are not meeting our high priorities, that we not just interview them as a courtesy, McDonough said. We have to all have the same information, have one goal, which is a county goal, not prior relationships or current relationships. That team has told us to go a different direction. McDonough returned to a position from various angles during the discussion, which Wickham criticized. Smart people can disagree every now and then, he said. What I really don't like is when you have two elected officials, the consensus of the board, and I've seen this play out so many times, and we just keep going down. Oh, I'm going to wear one of these guys down. McDonough said she was not trying to persuade fellow supervisors, but providing various perspectives, including a hired expert like McAndrews. The search team will get lists of which candidate supervisors want to interview, then schedule those in the coming weeks. Dubuque Business acquired by large software company. Story by Grace Neeland, thmedia.com. Dubuque-based software company Cartograph was recently acquired by OpenGov, a growing startup with an eye for assisting local governments. Following the acquisition, OpenGov plans to invest in research and development efforts to grow Cartograph's capacity with minimal disruptions planned for the day-to-day work of the Dubuque employees. It's exciting for Cartograph because we sell software into the public government space, and so does OpenGov. So it's a huge opportunity to grow in that area, said Cartograph spokesperson Katie Ernst of the acquisition. Cartograph began in Dubuque in 1994 and provides software to public agencies to help with infrastructure asset management. Local clients include the cities of Dubuque, Dyersville, and Asbury, although the company has clients and employees across the U.S. No staff cuts are expected to Cartograph's approximately 130 employees, and those workers will still report to Cartograph's CEO, Josh Malamud. We are proud to maintain a strong presence here in Dubuque and serve many local municipalities alongside our other customers, Malamud wrote in an email statement. This investment from OpenGov is a testament to the great work that's being done by Cartograph team, and we are looking forward to a bright future together. Cartograph was bought by a private equity firm in 2017 and was recently nearing the end of the firm's typical holding period when OpenGov expressed interest in acquiring the company. OpenGov spokesperson Matt Singer said the decision came down to three factors: alignment of mission, Cartograph's quality software, and a recent increase nationwide of investment and attention towards local infrastructure. More attention than ever is being paid to what's happening at the local level, and a big component of that is technology, Singer said. Our public servants deserve better, and joining forces with Cartograph gives us the opportunity to accelerate that mission. Singer said that with other recently acquired companies, OpenGov was able to double returns by ramping up marketing and investment in additional research. It now hopes to replicate this success at Cartograph. As the acquisition is still working its way through the regulatory approval process, Singer was not yet able to provide an estimate of how much money would go towards this process, but said OpenGov planned to, quote, significantly accelerate investment. I think the overall reaction from the staff has been one of excitement, Ernst said. It's big news for us as a company here in Dubuque. Coppola named Dyersville Woman of the Year. Jean Coppola was named Dyersville 2016 Woman of the Year during the annual Dyersville Women's Night at Total Fitness Rec Center. This story is a repeat from 2016 that was offered by TH Media. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, August 9th, 2022 on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. John W. Reifsteck, Naperville, Illinois. John W. Reifsteck, 76, of Naperville, Illinois, passed away Tuesday, August 2nd, 2022. A funeral service will be held at noon Thursday, August 11th, 2022 at the Furlong Funeral Chapel, Galena, where friends may call after 10 a.m. until the time of service. Burial will be in St. Mary's Catholic Cemetery, Galena. Military honors will be accorded graveside by Galena VFW Post 2665 and American Legion Post 193. He was born April 8, 1946, in Savannah, Illinois, the son of Clyde Dorothy Williams Reifstick. He attended Hanover High School, Hanover, Illinois. John served in the U.S. Army from 1966, serving 3 tours in Vietnam until his honorable discharge in 1972. He earned several awards, including the National Service Defense Medal, Army Commendation Medal, Vietnam Service Medal, Vietnam Campaign Medal, 5 Overseas Bars, Air Medal with 23rd OLC, and Expert M16. John was united in marriage to Marcia Pearl Norman on September 12, 1970 in Galena. He was employed by Northwestern Steel and Wire. After Math Incorporated and Ward Murray Pace and Johnson Law Firm. John enjoyed bowling, playing cards, coin collecting, hunting, fishing, coaching youth baseball and football, and raising show rabbits. He was a member of the Moose Lodge of Sterling, Illinois, and the Black Hawk Bowling League. John is survived by his wife, Marcia, 3 sons, Tim Sarah Reifseck of Naperville, Kevin Tabitha Reifseck of Yorkville, Illinois, and Brian Jamie Burfield Reifseck of Plainville, Illinois. 7 grandchildren, Tarion, Aurora, Austin, Brevin, Mackenzie, Blake, and Cole. 4 grandchildren, Makoa Dunn, Kaleo Dunn, Sophia Petrie, Trinity Lewis, 2 brothers, Joe Reifseck of Sterling, Illinois, and Joel Molly Reifseck of Freeport, Illinois, and many nieces and nephews and cousins. He was preceded in death by his parents, a sister Jean Heller, and a brother Jerry Reifseck. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.furlongfuneralchapel.com. Ralph E. Cummings. Ralph E. Cummings, age 78 of Dubuque, passed away at 4:51 p.m. on Friday, August 5, 2022, at home surrounded by his loving family. To celebrate Ralph's life, private family services were held. Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, is assisting the family. Ralph was born July 8, 1944, in Dubuque, Iowa, the son of William and Ella Thompson Cummings. Ryan J. Kramer, Bernard, Iowa. Ryan J. Kramer, 29, of Bernard, Iowa, passed away at his home, surrounded by his loving family, from complications of Friedreich's ataxia on Saturday, August 6, 2022. Private visitation and family services will be held Tuesday, August 9, 2022, at St. Martin's Catholic Church in Cascade, Iowa, with Reverend Mark Osterhaus presiding. Burial will be held in St. Patrick's Cemetery in Epworth. Services will be live-streamed on the St. Thomas Aquinas Pastorate Facebook page for those that wish to view it. Here's the obit for Robert H. Wallard. Robert Bob H. Wallard, 83 of Dubuque, died on Saturday, August 6, 2022. Visitation will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. Friday, August 12th, at St. Columbkill Catholic Church, where a mass of Christian burial will take place at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, August 13th. Interment will be at Mount Olivet Cemetery, Key West. Henry W. Lamphere. Dateline, Epworth, Iowa. Henry W. Lamphere, 88, of Epworth, died Saturday, August 6, 2022. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, August 11th, at Wright Funeral Home in Epworth, where services will take place at 10 a.m. Friday, August 12th. Burial will be in the Highview Cemetery in Epworth. Doris M. O'Neill, Platteville, Wisconsin. Doris M. O'Neill, 98, of Platteville, died on Friday, August 5, 2022. Visitation will be held from 9 to 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, August 10th, at United Methodist Church in Platteville, where services will follow. Burial will take place in Greenwood Cemetery in Platteville. Arlen E. Buck, Hanover, Illinois. Arlen E. Buck, 94, of Hanover, formerly of Savannah, died on Saturday, August 6, 2022. Visitation will be held from 9:30 to 11 a.m. Wednesday, August 10th at Law Jones Funeral Home in Hanover, where services will follow. Burial will follow in Evergreen Cemetery in Hanover. Stanley L. Kaufman, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Stanley L. Kaufman, 89, of Lancaster, died on Friday, August 5th, 2022. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Daniel Burroughs, Galena, Illinois. Daniel Dan Burroughs, 68, of Galena, Dine on Saturday, August 6, 2022. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Monday, August 15, at Furlong Funeral Chapel in Galena. Jeanette Whalew. Jeanette Jean Whalew, 87 of Dubuque, died on Monday, August 8, 2022. Arrangements are pending. Here are some funeral services in the Dubuque area. Rose A. Boringer, Castle, Wisconsin. Visitation, 9 to 11 a.m. Thursday, August 11th, St. Charles Catholic Church, Cassville. Massive Christian burial, 11 a.m. Thursday, August 11th at the church. Ron Fangman, Dyersville, Iowa. Massive Christian burial, 10:30 a.m. today, St. Francis Xavier Basilica, Dyersville. Here's a look at BizBuzz. Dubuque cafe owner opens Galena Pizza Spot. Illinois Resort gets new general manager. Longtime Dubuque County business gets new owners. By Kaylee Reese, thmedia.com. BizBuzz shares business tidbits from across the tri-states. This edition highlights developments in Galena, Illinois, and Rickardsville, Iowa. A Dubuque cafe owner has expanded his business resume by opening a new pizza spot in Galena. And unfortunately, there's a technical problem with the Dubuque Telegraph Herald website, and the rest of the story, this column, is missing. Wisconsin primary voting today. Voters in Wisconsin will head to the polls today to vote in a partisan primary election. Candidates on the ballot include statewide races for governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, state treasurer, secretary of state, state senators, odd-numbered districts, and state representatives. Federal offices up for election include a U.S. Senate seat and all U.S. House of Representatives seats. Arrest made in Clark County University. Social media threat. School lockdown lifted. Authorities have made an arrest after a threat posted to social media triggered a local university to close its campus Monday morning. Rashad Colbert, 23, no known address, was arrested Monday in Darien, Illinois, on a charge of a threat of terrorism after a social media post caused Clark University to lock down its campus and advise students to remain in their on-campus residences, according to Dubuque Police Department Assistant Chief Joseph Meserich. County VA aids veterans on pension disability claims. Story by Joshua Irvine. Teachmedia.com. Dubuque County Veterans Affairs has a fairly simple mission. Help former servicemen get what's theirs. Veterans don't always know what they're entitled to, said County Veteran Service Officer Doug Slatz, who left the Army in 2011 after 22 years of service. Dubuque County Veterans Affairs services include assistance filing pension and disability claims for veterans, rent and utility assistance for veterans food pantry, county general assistance via coordinated entry hotline. Contact you may call 563-589-7840. Dubuque man sentenced to probation for prostitution charge. A Dubuque man has been sentenced to 2 years of informal probation in relation to a prostitution charge. Thomas R. Specht, 40 of Dubuque, was recently given a deferred judgment in Iowa District Court in Dubuque County after pleading guilty to a charge of prostitution. With the deferred judgment, the payment obligations are successfully completed. The record of the case is expunged. Local law enforcement reports. The Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Department reported Sean J. Cass, 35, of 224 North Grandview Avenue, was arrested at 11:02 p.m. Sunday in the 1600 block of Asbury Road on charges of second-degree and third-degree harassment. Dakota J. Schilling, 27, of Piasta, Iowa, reported the theft of a vehicle worth $1,000 around 10:53 p.m. Friday at his residence. Man pleads guilty to sexually abusing girl younger than 15. A man is pleading guilty to sexually abusing a girl younger than 15 at a Dubuque County campground. Connor S. Schoenberger, 29, of St. Louis, recently pleaded guilty in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County to charges of third-degree sexual abuse and supplying alcohol to a person under the legal age. Here are some additional local law enforcement reports. reports from the Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Department. Corey J. Crawford, 29 of 677 Lorimer Street, was arrested at 2:46 a.m. Sunday in the 5000 block of Pennsylvania Avenue on charges of third offense, operating while intoxicated and driving while barred. Lori A. Bolsinger, 58, no permanent address, was arrested at 4:06 p.m. Saturday in the 400 block of Garfield Avenue on charges of possession of methamphetamine and possession of drug paraphernalia. Tiffany M. Pearson, 36, of Dyersville, Iowa, was arrested at 2:29 a.m. Saturday in Dyersville on a warrant charging assault. Court documents state that Pearson assaulted Iron A. Niali of Dyersville on July 30th in Dyersville. General Morgan V, 34, of 1897 Clark Drive, number 3, was arrested at 12:02 a.m. Saturday as residence on charges of first-degree harassment, assault on persons in certain occupations, interference with official acts with injury, and driving while barred. Court documents state that Morgan injured Dubuque Police Department Officer Carter J. Meyer while being apprehended and threatened Dubuque Police Lieutenant Wilkins Dujusty. Looking at local births for Thursday, August 4th, 2022. Taylor and Mallory Weber of Dubuque, twin boys, Unity Point Health, Finley Hospital, Dubuque. In other news, Iowa metal manufacturer settles U.S. government complaint. Story by the Associated Press, Dateline Des Moines. A Southwest Iowa company that makes metal casting used by military contractors and helicopters and other equipment has reached a settlement in a lawsuit alleging that the company failed to test the castings and falsely certified test results over 7 years. Wellman Dynamics, a crushing company that manufactures large metal castings used by military contractors, including Bell Helicopter, Sikorsky Aircraft, and Boeing Company, will pay $500,000 in restitution to the U.S. government to settle the allegations, court documents indicate. Artist says metal not reflects Altoona, Iowa, and the Midwest. Story by Chris Higgins. This story is from the Des Moines Register. Dateline Altoona, Iowa. The artist behind a unique new sculpture in Altoona says it reflects both the city's tightness, nature, and defining feature of the Midwest. Construction on woven lines, a sculpture by artist Aaron T. Steffen of Portland, Maine, is well underway at the site of a new roundabout at First Avenue North and 9th Street Northwest. It's made from 1,500 feet of metal guardrail that swoops into a 20,000-pound knot and will serve as an anchor of Altoona's north side. In Wisconsin political news, Cleflich downplays Trump endorsement on final swing. Story by the Associated Press, Madison, Wisconsin. Republican candidate for governor Rebecca Cleflich downplayed Donald Trump's endorsement and rally for her opponent during her final campaign push across Wisconsin Monday and declined to respond to the former president's criticism. Cleflich faces Trump endorsed Tim Michaels in today's primary, with the winner advancing to face Democratic Governor Tony Evers. Trump derided Cleflich as a career politician and a political insider during a rally for Michaels in suburban Milwaukee on Friday night. He called her the, quote, handpicked candidate of the failed establishment. Democrats look ahead to Barnes and fall race against Ron Johnson. Dateline Madison, Wisconsin, by the Associated Press. Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes grew up in Milwaukee with a mom who was a public school teacher and a father who worked in a factory, both union members, as an important credential in a state where the labor movement is still fierce. At 35, Barnes is nearly half the age of the average U.S. senator and would join a tiny group of black senators and would be the first from Wisconsin if he wins election to the chamber. That biography stands to turn Barnes into one of the most prominent Democrats in U.S. this year as the party aims to defeat one of its top targets, Republican Senator Ron Johnson. His ouster is such a priority that Barnes' top Democratic rivals dropped out of the primary in recent weeks to rally around him, leaving today's primary as mostly a formality ahead of what's certain to be a brutal and expensive general election campaign. I wanted to make sure we can win this fall, his closest rival Milwaukee Bucks executive Alex Lazary said when he dropped out and supported Barnes. That is the number one goal. Austin Johnson has never been a bigger priority for Democrats with the majority of control of the Senate on the line. He's the only incumbent Senate Republican seeking re-election this year in a state that President Joe Biden carried. But Johnson has proven tough to beat as he's grown from a Tea Party outsider into one of Donald Trump's most vocal supporters and Wisconsin senior senator. This election is Wisconsin's first against someone other than Russ Feingold, whom he defeated in 2010, and then in a 2016 rematch, losses that still sting liberals in a swing state. Johnson is running for a third term after previously saying he wouldn't. Democrats will walk through fire and across broken glass to beat Ron Johnson, Democratic strategist Joe Zepecki said. With his focus increasingly on the fall, Barnes is emphasizing an everyman image in campaign ads, including one in a grocery store in which he says most senators don't know what a gallon of milk costs. But I'm not like most senators, Barnes says, walking down the store aisles, or any of the other millionaires running for Senate. My mom was a teacher and my dad worked the third shift. Barnes served 4 years in the state assembly representing Milwaukee before he won statewide primary for lieutenant governor in 2018 to be paired with Governor Tony Evers. Evers then defeated Governor Scott Walker, who enraged Democrats over 8 years in office, most famously for his Act 10 law that effectively ended collective bargaining for most public workers. Barnes, who must still get past a handful of little-known opponents today, has already turned his sights to Johnson. He frequently compares beating Walker to what it will take to deny Johnson a third term. It's going to be difficult, uphill battle, Barnes said after Larry Lazary dropped out of the race, but I know it'll be that much easier because we're in this together. And I'll remind you that 4 years ago, the race to get rid of Scott Walker was a difficult one, one that was a lot of people, that a lot of people in the audience today said it was impossible. But we got it done because we came together. Johnson raised about $7 million in donations between April and June, more than the entire Democratic field. Barnes raised about $2.1 million, but in the week after Lazary and others dropped out, Barnes reported raising $1.1 million. Barnes built the most well-rounded campaign in the primary, with key endorsements from the likes of Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, raising money and delivering a message focused on that middle-class upbringing. When it was reported during the 2018 campaign that Barnes earned so little that he paid no income tax and was on the state's Medicaid program, he embraced it as evidence that he understood how critical the program is for working people. Barnes previewed his attack strategy in his first TV spot after his top rivals dropped out, accusing Johnson of being out of touch with Wisconsin, citing Johnson's decision not to attempt to save 1,000 jobs moving out of the state. Johnson said at the time that Wisconsin has enough jobs. Johnson and Republicans are already at work portraying Barnes as too liberal for Wisconsin. In a state that Trump won in 2016 and lost in 2020 by a nearly equal number of votes, the election will once again likely come down to who can win over independents, a small but key group. The power brokers of the Democratic Party have now cleared the field for their most radical left candidate, Johnson tweeted before the primary. Socialist policies have produced this mess, and a radical left senator from Wisconsin is not the solution. The Senate Leadership Fund, a political action committee that works to get Republicans elected, targeted Barnes for holding an Abolish ICE t-shirt. It supported comments about the Green New Deal and Medicaid for All, and a 2022 Pulit tweet in which he said defunding police only dreams of being as radical as Donald Trump. Republicans have also attacked Barnes for supporting any cash bail in comments he made at a town hall last fall about the founding of a country that referenced slavery and colonization. The United States is the most wealthy, the most powerful nation on earth, and it's because of forced labor on stolen land, Barnes said. Winning the primary without facing the attacks that are to come may come back to haunt Democrats, said Republican strategist and former Johnson campaign staff member Brian Reisinger. The question for Democrats now is have they had a thorough vetting process to have a candidate who can do what they haven't done before, Reisinger said. It's not clear if they've really figured out who can beat Ron Johnson. These candidates have really not tested one another. Barnes deflected a question about whether he would be a stronger candidate if the Democratic primary had been more contentious. What's most important is that we are experiencing unity that has not been seen before, Barnes said. In this state, we set out of the gate to build a broad coalition. We are doing that. This is about uniting the party, and I would say that we are more united than we have ever been before. Johnson was first elected as a fiscal conservative known for attacking spending and intent on lowering national debt. In recent years, as coronavirus rose and Trump fell, he became a lightning rod for anti-science positions and conspiracy theories on the 2020 election. He joined the many Republicans who have played down the riot at the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, saying he wasn't scared by the insurrectionists, but would have been concerned if they had been Black Lives Matter protesters. It also emerged during the recent January 6 House Committee hearing that Johnson had wanted to hand-deliver ballots cast by fake GOP electors to my Vice President Mike Pence. Johnson's favorability ratings in a June 22 Marquette University Law School poll was just 37% lower than President Joe Biden's 40% approval rating. But Johnson was about even in matchups with Barnes. However, enthusiasm among Republicans was higher than Democrats for voting in the upcoming primary. Democratic voter Leah Ciordia, who attended a Barnes rally with Warren, said she was making her pick based on who she thought could beat Johnson. Warren Lazary dropped out. The 57-year-old retired computer analyst was considering him, but was leaning towards Barnes. He's a real person to me, not just a billionaire, Ciordia said of Barnes, and she added, anybody's better than Johnson. Here's an editorial from the Dubuque Telegraph Herald editorial board. Our opinion, Iowa tax holiday should extend to school supplies, most everything else. After more than 20 years of administrating Iowa's sales tax holiday weekend in the same way, state officials do not appear interested in making the arrangement more palatable and sensible for consumers. Nevertheless, it bears repeating. Having tax-free days on the first Friday and Saturday of August is a pretty nice advantage for parents getting ready to send kids back to school or off to college. These editorials reflect the consensus of the Telegraph Herald editorial board. Here's another editorial. Our opinion, celebrate a summer tradition with a visit to a county fair. As we stretch into the dog days of summer, you can almost smell the corn dogs on the midway from area county fairs. And this week marks the 69th annual Dubuque County Fair, making it one of the oldest and most popular events in the country county. After two summers that saw curtailed and canceled events at county fairs, the Midwest's quintessential summertime family fun spot is back in its all its glory. That means demolition derby, concerts, fresh squeezed lemonade, blue ribbons, and Ferris wheel. Our opinion? Inflation exacerbates food insecurity in more ways than one. This is also from the TH editorial board. When it comes to food pantries, inflation is something of a double whammy. Because of the cost of food, gas, utilities, and household products have skyrocketed in recent months. More low-income people are turning to food pantries for help. But the inflationary increases are so extreme that people of all income levels feel the pinch, so fewer folks are donating to food pantries. That makes for a significant challenge in food insecurity, both locally and across the country. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, August 9th, 2022. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you very much for listening.